It delights me many times over when I hear my colleagues say, we talk to the real heavyweights of the media industry. Well, we have the pleasure of having an actual world heavyweight. Literally, a world heavyweight boxing champion. He's the American two-time world heavyweight champion and Olympic gold medalist. And he joins us right now, George Foreman. Pleased to meet you, George.
Thank you so much.
How do you get to be a champion? We can understand that you can be born with talent, and we can understand that you can be a strong person and you can be fit. But what does it make to get you further than the rest and be a champ?
Well, for me, it took the fight. You got to have fight in you. And I don't think you have to, and I don't mean literally throwing punches, but you got to have fight, because in a boxing match, a lot of times before a boxing match, you're even sick. You got a flu. You got a broken hand. But that fight carries you through. If you're going to be a champion, you got to have it through and through. Fight. Fight sickness. Fight rumors. Fight love affairs. You got to have it all. You got to fight.
There was even talk that you were feeling unwell, I believe, when you were taking on Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali.
And that could be the demise of one, too. Too much fight. Because I fought Muhammad Ali in Africa, of course. I got cut literally a month before the fight. Well, I was getting ready to fight. 15 days away from the fight, I got a cut. So I had to stitch myself up, not literally with stitches, but tape, make a butterfly, and then hold over without even sparring. I was that sure I could win. The cut was healed, but not thoroughly. You can't heal a cut like that in a month. But I fought with that. That's not the reason I was defeated, of course. It was the right hand he hit me with.
Well, that can make a difference. How is it when you're standing up against someone like Muhammad Ali, when you're facing a boxer of that kind of stature? What are you thinking? Is it all fight, or are you thinking, now that's a big guy?
Well, my major fear was me, George Foreman. I feared myself, because I knew once the bell started to ring, I wouldn't back down. I wouldn't run or cover up from anyone. And you don't know where that's going to get you. My major fear was myself, inside of me. I'd be in the dressing room worried about me. You know, you got to learn to back up. And I never did back up. Even when I fought Joe Frazier, I was extremely afraid of him. I mean, this guy was a nightmare, walking nightmare. But I knew when the bell would ring, I wasn't going to be the one running from anyone. My fear was of myself.
So do you keep a purposeful ear out to your coach as kind of like your guideline on this?
You train constantly and you trust people, of course. You got to have trust. And that's one thing it takes to be a champion, is trusting your corner. Listening to people telling you about whatever weakness that you have or whatever strength you have, and the weakness from the other corner. I listen. You keep an ear out. You could be in an arena where there's 25,000-30,000 people screaming, but you can only hear that one or two trainers that's been with you for weeks.
Does your mind ever kind of move away from that when you're really in the thick of it and you're really getting beaten? And got to remember these, we've got to remember these guys are hitting you on the head, even if they can get one in. Is there a point where you think, okay, has my coach really got the right advice, or should I just do my own thing?
Yeah. And then you have your instincts as well. As a matter of fact, your coach's job is to help guide your instincts to kind of, okay, you're going in the right direction, but turn left here, turn right there, that kind of a thing. So to help drive the vehicle. But you have your own thoughts, your instincts, but you better go in that fight with the ability and knowing that you can fight, because most of the times I'd be hit sometimes. You can only see, you're seeing three or four of one fellow. You're seeing three or four of the same guy. And if you don't have fight in you, you'll quit and go back to your corner and say, I need eyeglasses. But there has to be the instinct to continue to fight. Fight all three of those guys you see in front of you, though as one, until your vision straightens out again and you can see just a single person again. But what you go in majorly is with fight, and that's something a trainer can't give you. He can give you good advice, but that fight got to be within.
Do you believe maybe this is a lot of being able to really live the moment? Because you wouldn't be thinking about longevity. You wouldn't be thinking, gee, how will this punch affect me when I'm an older person? It's all about the exact moment.
You make a sacrifice, and you understand once you become a boxer, look, I look this way, I act that way, I speak a certain way. After each fight, there's going to be a difference within me, and you understand that, but you're willing to make that sacrifice because You've promised to get mom a house. You've promised to send your brothers to college. And then you have children. You got all these promises to make a better community for yourself. So there's going to be some hazards, and there's going to be some pain and some changes in your figuration, but that doesn't mean anything. Everybody's got to make a sacrifice.
That's right. Now, there's all 6'4" of you, 1.93 meters, I think, of a heavyweight boxer. Has there been someone that you were fighting that made you think, no, that's someone to be intimidated by? Would Joe Frazier, do you think, be the...
It would have been Joe Frazier, because I'd followed his career. As a matter of fact, I was getting ready to be a boxer, went to my first closed-circuit television fight. Joe Frazier was fighting then Buster Mathis, and I'd never seen a little guy just kept coming. The bigger guy hit him, pushed him away. He did everything, but finally Joe Frazier knocked that big guy down. I was hoping that he would be dead before I had to fight for the title. And then when it was time to fight him, I kept thinking maybe it'll rain if the fight was in Kingston, Jamaica. I said maybe there'll be a storm out here. Something, I don't need to go through with this. But once the bell rang, I was off to fighting again. But I was intimidated by Joe Frazier, literally.
That's amazing, isn't it? And you just kept going for it, didn't you?
Yeah, I kept going for it. And he wasn't the most big guy that you'd ever fight either. He was just basically a small fella. But they called him Smoking Joe Frazier because he had so much fire in him.
What about the way things are changing now in boxing? For instance, some of the greatest matches I think we could ever lay claim to seeing were on free-to-air TV. Now we're seeing a lot of it on pay-per-view. How do you feel about that, George?
That's the way of television, pretty much. That's the way television is going. You pay as you go. Although, if you're going to make a hero, he's going to have to come in on free television. People are going to have to get to know him. I got one boy. His name is George Foreman. George Foreman 3. We call him Monk. He's already training to be a boxer. And he's got a name, but he's going to have to fight so that people can have confidence in him. And it's going to happen with free television.
So that's the way to make a people's hero.
Make people know you.
You got to be out there on free TV.
You got to be on free TV, and you must let them hear from you on radio. Television is only copied radio.
Do you believe that maybe the champion fights, because of the huge amounts of money that they demand and they can get, do you think if maybe the boxer's got a smaller fee, that the free-to-air TV could take these matches and the people could get a boxing free?
You would hope every now and then there would be a great boxing match on free television. But right now, the pay-per-view business is so lucrative, you expect a guy to make as much as he can, as quickly as he can. There was a day a boxer would fight 20, maybe 30, 40, 50 boxing matches and never make $100,000. And then by the time he retired, he was slurred of speech. He could barely walk. And that didn't benefit anyone. Now, a good fighter with 25 or 30 boxing matches, he's multimillionaire. And he can quit if he so chooses and go into another field. So the pay-per-view advent is a good deal.
Okay, and the safety aspect of boxing, it almost sounds awkward to say safety in boxing, but you've played in the Olympics and you've performed without the protective gear, the headgear particularly. What kind of a difference does that make to the fight?
It's a lot of difference. I went to the Olympics, as a matter of fact. I had an amateur career, a total of 25 boxing matches with a headgear. Now it was time to get into the Olympics without headgear. And there you are. You could bump heads with someone. You could easily scratch your ears. All kind of things could happen, a quick knockdown, because of without the protective headgear. So it's not. I've always felt that boxers should always, even in professional fights, wear protective headgear. You can last a lot longer, suffer less cuts.
Mm-hmm.
It would be better for the sport.
Do you think boxers go harder when they're wearing protective gear?
No, I don't think so. It's the same. Once that bell rings, you don't know. You don't see headgear. You see the man.
Do you have a talk?
The headgears are just there.
Do you have a talk? I hear stories about Muhammad Ali kind of teasing his opponent, calling them name, you know, friendly names like Scarecrow or you know,
everything.
Monster,
you know, man. Joe Frazier, of course, became very angry because it was said he kept calling him an Uncle Tom.
Uncle Tom.
He called Muhammad Ali. And Frazier got angry and crazy because he told me, he said, I couldn't stand this guy. He kept calling me an Uncle Tom. He said, and I didn't want my wife thinking that when I leave out in the morning with that hood on my head that I was peeping in people's window. He actually thought he was calling him a peeping Tom. That's the reason he was so angry. Mohammed would give names. He was pretty accurate. He called me the Frankenstein monster.
That's right. He did, didn't he?
And, you know, he called me Frankenstein. Here come the Frankenstein. And he was only saying that because it was true. I was a nightmare.
That's
right. I was the Frankenstein monster in the ring. He had me right that time.
Yeah, he reckoned he had this story of you. He says the Frankenstein monster is, you know, you see this little kid sees the monster run through his life, and no matter how fast he runs, this slow-moving monster just keeps on. He's always there.
He catches him no matter what speed you're running. That's true.
Right. That's what he said. You know, that's what he said of you. Now, talking of you and your home life now, gee, you got it nailed when it comes to naming the boys, haven't you? They're all called George.
That's true. I told my wife, if ever I got some problems that I would forget one of my kids' names, I would retire from boxing. I couldn't miss. I call them all George Edward Foreman, even the same middle name.
Gee, that's it keeps it real simple. George.
George Foreman, Book of Baby Names.
That's right. Yeah, nice and simple. And how do you feel about them taking on boxing? Are you delighted about that? Are you worried that they might get hurt? Because, you know, you're a parent as well as a boxer with fire.
And you are a parent, and it's a scary thing. But I told them all to discourage them. I said, look, you must have a college education. You got to get a college degree. Then if you get a college degree and you go out and try to do it, I will assist you. And generally, by the time they get a college degree, most of them are discouraged. But there's one, he's got his business degree, and he's working on his master's. He decided, okay, I'm going to do it now, so I'll help him. And they can think it out. And once you get a child who starts to think things out, you're not worried about him. He's thinking all the time.
I could well imagine. And your home life extends, too, because it's interesting how many people have reached the best that they can be in whatever area, music, entertainment, even in sport and with you, and then they turn to religion. Or maybe they've always had religion, but it's now very clear, because I understand you're an ordained Christian minister.
That's right, and I've been for 32 years now. I had this experience in 1977 where I had a vision. I was dead and alive in a split second. I didn't believe in religion. I thought it was for weak people and broke people, poor people. That's all I'd seen. Embrace it. But in a dressing room after a fight in 77 with Jimmy Young, I was dead and alive, and I was in this deep dog dump yard of sorrow, and it was the end of me. And I was so scared seeing everything I'd ever worked for perish. I just got mad and said, I don't care if this is death. I still believe there's a God. I just didn't believe in religion. When I said that I was alive again in a dressing room, and evidently they picked me up off the floor, because as I lay on the dressing room table, I told my doctor to move his hands because the thorns on his head were making him bleed. Then I told my masseur, move your hand, he's bleeding where they crucified him. Never said things like this. Jesus Christ has come alive in me. My whole life changed. I haven't been the same since. I've been on a journey of my life to death and life again. Didn't believe in religion, thought it was crazy. And then here I am 32 years later, an ordained minister at the Church of the Lord Jesus Christ, where I preach, do weddings, and horribly sometimes a lot of funerals.
This is a circle of life, though, isn't it? You get as much out of life and you give as much as you can. And certainly you're a bit of a leading example when we talk about getting as much out of life as you can. An entrepreneur as well. Is there anything that you have not yet done, George, and you're looking forward to trying?
There are so many things in life. You just got to wake up every morning with an interest, a special interest, something that you haven't done, and I got to recreate things all the time. I was really successful as a salesperson because I learned how to sell myself as a senior boxer, so I went back into selling the grills, of course, and that really got me happy. Now I've gone into a cleaning supply, earth-friendly things, green equipment. I'm sold on that now that I'm going to make the whole world turn green. With the George Foreman cleaning supplies, and then for those who beat me out, they'll even have better green cleaning supplies. So I'm happy about that. There are just so many things to do. I mean, I've got one last boy who hasn't got a college education, who hasn't entered into college, and I want to see him graduate. I'd like to be the first boxer to visit the moon. Next shuttle is going up.
I reckon you'd be fit enough for it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'd like to go travel to the moon. So that's, and it'll happen.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
I don't want to be an astronaut, but I sure would like to get up there and shadow box on the moon.
How about
those space stations?
That would be a shadow box indeed. And would you would you do the cooking? What is the story with your amazing grill? People love it. Absolutely, they love it. Tell us all about it.
The most amazing thing about it, it works. A man like myself, I tell everybody the story was that you'd marry a woman, and their wives always outlive their husbands. And I found out the reason being, we all eat leftovers. Some of us work so hard, and come home, the kids and the wife is already eating, so they have to warm the food up for us again. But now with that George Foreman grill, I'm told you could just go home, even slice prime rib and have it in the evening, a fresh prime rib on the grill, a chicken. A broccoli, asparagus, right on that grill, and within, 25 minutes, you can have a home-cooked meal. And so what? It's going to extend our lives. At least we'll live right along with our wives now.
I like it.
The grill does it.
It's amazing. Does it give you a kind of a, you know, a kind of a casual thrill maybe when you're in the supermarket and you see one of your grills there on sale with your name there and your smiling face, you think, hey, that's me.
I still like to, when I go by there, I say, I'll buy that. That's me on that box. I still love it. I still love it. I haven't overcome that yet.
And just quickly before we run right out of time, and thank you for all your time this morning, George Foreman, champion, what would you say to parents who are thinking, well, we've got our little boy, maybe even little girl too, or we've seen Muhammad Ali's daughter get involved. What would you say to them if they thought of taking on boxing? Because there has been a cry against the sport saying it's too dangerous. Why are we still doing it?
And the thing about it, there's been a cry against boxing since the beginning of time, but it's the granddaddy of all sports. It's going to always be there. As long as you've got boys who look down on and see a muscle on their arm, or even girls now who figures, I don't have to take this, there's going to be a boxing match somewhere. It might as well be organized. That's the way I see it.
Have you ever played Queensbury Rules? I saw it on an old program one time. These two gentlemen standing up rather proper, taking turns. Have you ever had a go at that?
No, but, you know, that's what we boxed by, the Marcus of Queensbury Rules. He was the one who decided, I mean, that rule, because the sheriff decided no hitting behind the head, yeah. No rabbit punching, no hitting below the belt. We go by those rules.
We better just say hello, too, because we've got a few people of Perth tuned in this morning, and they're all saying hello, so maybe you'd like to say hi to all your fans tuned in this morning, George.
Hello, and hello to all my fans. I really appreciate being with you in one of the greatest countries in the world. Best stakes, I can tell you that. Thank you so much for having me.
George Foreman, champion, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show, and enjoy the rest of your life, and we look forward to seeing you on the moon, because I reckon if anyone can get there, it will be you.
Going to the moon.
Hey, this is Big George Foreman, and you're listening to John Lewis. Don't you move that dial. Thank you.